You know, there's times in our lives that faith is a fun thing to talk about. We like to debate it. We like to think about it. We like to think about this scripture. But you know, there's another kind of faith, and it's the kind of faith that really matters. And it's those times that faith is nothing to think about or analyze or criticize, but faith is just how we live and how we walk. I am so gifted, Simon, that you're here today, because in your story, you have walked and lived and live this scripture. So for the gift of you sharing how this scripture has touched your life, my hope and my prayer is that we may listen to where we are in the story today and where God is calling us, yes, to some dying, to some listening, and to some new life.
Good morning. It's very exciting for me to be up here preaching with my very good friend Peter. We're supposed to go together, Simon and Peter. And people think we're brothers a lot, which is strange given my accent. But it's a real honor to be asked as a boat building lay person that's good with people to come up and talk to all of you in this congregation. Thank you. So Peter's asked me to share something of my own journey and relate it to this very important story, this Bible story, about living authentically. I want to tell you about how I became Simon, because I wasn't always Simon. I was born Ruth. I was born a girl. And I want to tell you a little bit background about that before I start relating my life to the story with Judas and the unnamed woman. So let me tell you a little bit about me. So in 1975, in a wee Scottish town, I was born as the beautiful daughter, third child. My mum had wanted a daughter for a long time. She was so happy. She was just overjoyed to have a little girl. And for a wee while, that was great. I wore little sunbonnets and it was smiley, and I've always been good with people. And everybody thought I was the cutest thing ever, and I didn't cry very much. And then I suppose what happened was that me inside began to grow and behave in a way that wasn't very girl-like. I remember when I was 5, I remember thinking, oh, I behave a lot more like a boy than I do a girl. And I was out on my bike, I had this huge accident, cut my chin open, and they took me to the hospital in a pram, which was very embarrassing when you're 5. Blood everywhere. It was really funny about this was my dad was a doctor, and he came home, and my mom said, oh, you better go upstairs and look at Ruth. And he went up to the attic, and he was looking at the roof for ages. But eventually, my mom found him and went, no, your daughter. So, and I had these blue stitches in my chin, and everybody said, oh, we should have given you pink stitches, but we don't have any. And I said, no, I want blue. I want to have a blue beard. And everybody at school called me Bluebeard. And I was so proud. And I think it was in that moment I realized, oh, they think I'm a little girl and that I want girl things, and I don't want those things. And it wasn't a big issue back then. I had a family in which I could climb trees and do whatever I needed to do. But as I got older, it became more difficult. And probably when I was about 7 or 8, I realized that if I hid parts of myself, I would have an easier time. People would laugh at me quite a lot. And my parents would fight with me about what I wore or how I got my hair cut. And then when I became a teenager, it became really, really bad. And adolescence was very difficult. And I knew that my body was changing and that I was turning into a woman. But I didn't know how to do that because I didn't feel like that on the inside. And it became really bad when I was about 21. I was feeling so uncomfortable. And that's about the age that you're supposed to grow up, really, isn't it? 21. And while I was carrying all that, I just felt very oppressed by it. I went on holiday to Vancouver. A friend of mine, who turned out to be an angel, said, "Oh, I'm living in Vancouver. I've just inherited this money that I don't want to use. It was from a car accident. My friendship with you helped me get over the car accident. I want to give you a treat and fly you out to Vancouver because there's some people here that you have to meet." And it's like, somebody wants to buy you an airplane ticket and fly you away, you know. I just graduated. I had no money. So I went to Vancouver and I met these flatmates of her, and they were transsexual guys. And I thought they were fascinating. I was absolutely fascinated by them. I asked them 50 million questions, and they taught me that your personality on the inside can be a mixture of male and female. Everybody's is. And sometimes that balance is a wee bit skew-whiff. And when that happens, it's a lot more difficult. And I felt so liberated by that. I thought, there's male in me as well as female. I need to explore this. And that was the start of a journey that has led me to here. I could talk about it for 10 years, but you're not going to be here for 10 years, and we need to get on. So that was about 10 years ago. Maybe it was 15 years ago that I went to Vancouver. And about 10 years ago, I started to change. And it was really shocking for people. It was shocking. Especially for people that had known me for a long time. You know, I'm quite a gentle person. My mom thought I was a stereotypical mother. I'd be a great mom. Great with kids. They could see a lot of feminine qualities in me. But they couldn't see the masculine qualities. And that, I think that's because I kept them really quiet and really personal. I dressed in a very male way, but, you know, quite a lot of women do. You could kind of get away with it. I got quite a lot of harassment for it, but I could still find a way. But it was shocking when I said, actually, no, I don't want to be Ruth. And not only that, I'm going to change my body so that I can be more male, so that it's more like the outside of my body is more like the inside. That was really hard for people. Why are you killing off this beautiful person that we know that's called Ruth? And how dare you violate your body? God gave you this body. It was shocking. And I'm going to jump back now into the Bible story, because it was shocking. You know, Jesus is doing his thing, and this woman who's just there cracks open this stone bottle of expensive perfume, worth more than anything I own, and worth more than I could earn this year. She cracks this open and she pours it over Jesus' head like you would with a king. Hugely costly act, and what for? People were shocked. But we need to step back and we need to listen to all the voices in the story and hear what they have to say, because I really feel strongly that all those voices in a situation like that speak within us. And I'm going to go through that, and hopefully this will make sense. So, I'm the shocked disciple that's watched this. A loud, angry voice that says, "What on earth are you doing? And why? Tell me, why are you doing this?" That's a response that's really familiar to me from 10 years ago. Why on earth are you doing this? And you know what? I had that voice within myself as well. It's a rational argument, you know. I tried to think, well, you're not male. You've not been born male. You're not a transsexual man, you're not suicidal, and you're not mentally ill. Find a way for yourself as a woman. Be a masculine woman, date other women, you know, like, find a way. Desperately wanted to rationally make my masculinity go away. especially the medical route, I have always had a deep reverence for nature. Back then when I was going through this, I was not a person of faith. My Christianity had not sprung up yet. And I think part of the reason that was because I was so internally focused with this thing that I couldn't deal with, that I wasn't really looking up. I really didn't want to go down the medical route. And I started living as he for a while, just cross-dressing and telling people that I was Simon. And I looked like a 12-year-old boy. And that was okay, kind of, but I started to get harassed in the street by people who had noticed. I got attacked by my neighbors, and it was difficult to find work. And I knew that people couldn't really see who I was. And the voice, the shocked voice that other people spoke to me and that I heard and that I spoke to myself, it, for years, well, it spoke very loudly, very good arguments. And I would back myself out of it. I was like, no, I can't do this. I'll find a way. And I'd settle into the life that I already existed. Because, you know what, it kept the peace. It wasn't distressing my parents. If I could find that way, there would be great benefit. But every time it would come back around again, which is, Simon, you need to be Simon and not Ruth. You know, it would come back and it would come back louder and faster and hit me in the head all over again, and the same questions would keep coming up. And the question was, what on earth are you doing? It was a loud voice and it spoke to me a lot. I am the shocked disciple who watches. And I'm Judas. I'm more than shocked. I'm enraged. I'm bitter. Through clenched teeth, I say, do not do this. No. And the voice, the accent I hear in my head is my mother's. Do not do this to me. You are my daughter. Simon does not exist in my life. Very angry, very hurt, and very, very frightened. And frightened for me. And it makes me wonder about Judas. I think about Judas a lot. Because his story isn't, you know, why did he do this? Was he appalled by what Jesus did? Did he hate what Jesus was saying? Jesus had just been saying, you're going to be arrested and beaten. And, you know, my truth that is speaking through you is going to get you into a lot of trouble. Don't worry, it'll all turn right. I'm leaving you. And he starts speaking this crazy stuff about the end of time and the end of the world. And I still don't really know. Like, I've spent years studying that. I still don't really know what that was about. Maybe I shouldn't say that when I'm behind the podium. So for whatever reason, Judas was so appalled by what he saw. Maybe he thought that Jesus was a false Messiah. And I think it's important to listen to his voice. Because it speaks, it shouts, and it cuts. But what is the motivation behind it? What is the motivation? And it's fear. And trying to destroy the truth. And I want to tell you a little bit about where this voice spoke within me very, very strongly. And it spoke when, you know, I told you earlier that my neighbors assaulted me, not badly, but enough that you don't want to live there anymore. They were Pakistani youth who were just trying to uphold the values of their community. I was living in a Pakistani area of Glasgow. They didn't know any better. And then I moved in with my friend into a nicer area of town. And we had a housewarming. And then she had a new flatmate move in. And the new flatmate was very freaked out when she met me. She was told that Simon lives here and that he's kind of gay. Well, I suppose I'm kind of gay, you know. I used to be a lesbian, and my name is Simon. So it was an inaccurate description for this woman who moved in, and she couldn't deal with it. And she was embarrassed to bring her friends over, and she moved out immediately. And at the housewarming, a lot of people responded very badly to me and my friends. And my friend there was frightened. She was a lesbian. She'd already been fired from one job because she was a teacher, private school teacher, and allegations had been made against her. And she'd moved back to Scotland and was starting over with a new private school. And she was frightened that if me, so visibly queer and different, lived in her house, people would ask questions about her, and the cost of that would be too much. My friend Jan. And she asked me to leave, and I was homeless. And I couldn't believe it. I just moved less than a month. And I had to tell my parents, and they asked that question of, is it because of your weird gender thing that she asked you to leave? And I had to say, yes. So my parents' fears around that were coming real. That I wouldn't get a job, that I'd never find a partner, that I wouldn't be able to find a place to live. And that night I went to for my friend's house, and she handed me a guitar and gave me a bed, and she didn't know what else to do when I told her what had happened. And I went to bed that night and I thought, I am making myself into a trans monster. Nobody is going to want to be in relationship with me. I'm going to be a single person for the rest of my life. I can't find work. I'm finding housing difficult. I can't do this. I cannot do this. And I made a plan that night that I was going to move to Edinburgh. I'd just been offered a job working with lesbian and gay youth, and I thought, I'll go to Edinburgh, I'll find a new house, and I'll tell people that I'm Ruth, and I'll forget about this, because it's just too hard. But luckily, I slept on it, and in the morning, I felt a bit better. So I am Judas, that voice that says, no, don't do this, that voice that's motivated by other people's false understanding. But I'm also the unnamed woman, the still small voice that says, yes, it is so. Yes. She recognizes the truth in the situation and she honors it. And that validation, I imagine, was so important for Jesus. I imagine it would have brought tears to his eyes. And they would have had a really deep exchange. And the people watching would have completely misunderstood it and gone off their rocker about it. There's great power in the voice of this unnamed woman, if you can recognize it. The trick is to listen for it because it speaks quietly. And anyway, who is this woman? What does she know? Why does she know more than the disciples? But she does. And in my situation, it was often people that had only just met me that said, yes, I can see this little baby masculinity, this Simon, this boy that you never got to be. Yeah, I think you should do that. It was much easier for people that were not invested in me to see that and to recognize that. And I think I first heard it in other people. So this voice, I think it's really important that it speaks from a loving place and it's very patient. You know, when we are trying to work out what to do, to listen for where the voice is coming from. And it's funny that in the story that this voice comes from the unnamed woman, because in my life, I call that voice Christ. You know, that still, small voice that I almost hear. I label that as Christ consciousness that lives in me and in all of you. I can hear it within myself and I can hear it in a conversation with an old lady on the bus. And I think others plant that seed. I think others planted that seed in me. A good example would be when before I had all my employment issues and was effectively forced out the door and fired for being too weird. I had a good boss. He got pushed out the door too. Everybody that was good got pushed out the door, so maybe I should take that as an honor. At the time, it didn't feel like an honor. And he, this guy Tim, when I told him about my situation, he went and he changed my name on the payroll to Simon Ruth, which is still my legal name. It was not my legal name then. And I would never have asked for that. But he said, is this not where you are going? Is this not true for you? And I had to say, well, yes, it is. It is true for me. So the unnamed woman hears Jesus when he says, I am going to die. I am leaving you. And she gracefully does a beautiful thing for Jesus. And it enables him to go to Gethsemane. It touches him. Tomorrow in the story, Jesus goes to Gethsemane. And he faces some horrendous, awful things. It's not the end of the story, we know that. But I think that this encounter on the Wednesday is so important to him. I am the unnamed woman. I am Jesus. I am Jesus. I feel good. But the thing is, right? There's no voice here. You know how the other voices said yes or no, or this voice doesn't say anything. It's a knowing. And I think it doesn't say anything because it's my voice waiting to be called forth. I need to find those words and I need to speak it. So Jesus has heard the still small voice. I don't know, maybe it was loudspeaker for him. Who knows? And he knows what he needs to do. I suspect he doesn't know if he can do it, but he knows what he needs to do. He has to live out his truth in action. He has to embody it. That truth that he has heard. We have to embody it, and I have to embody my own truth. I had to find a way of nurturing this masculine side of me that society didn't give place for. And when I was reading the Bible story, I was really struck by Jesus' humanity in this story. I think he's lonely and frightened. Well, I was. And my burden was so heavy. Some days I couldn't carry it forward. I would just sit with it for a while. That's why it's so important when other people recognize your truth so that you can feel the emotions and you can go forward. I think that I am Jesus' voice in the story, and in my story is about becoming. And it's on a day-to-day basis. And that's what makes it really difficult. It's 3 years of this. It's a lifetime of this. I can't bear this, but I will try. And it's also kind of hard when you have heard that call and you've heard that still small voice, and you haven't heard it recently, but you still know it's true, to keep that alive and to hold that in faith. I've got that at the moment with my sense of calling about doing boat building. In 2008, I think I heard Jesus, or God, saying, Simon, be a boat-building minister. Oh, okay. That was 3 years ago. And just the other day, when I was back home in Scotland, I had another chat with God. I was like, God, you know, isn't the ministry a bit more important than my music? My music is touching the lives of people, and, you know, I am really not very good at boat-building. I'm not bad at it. My boats will not sink. But why? And I really heard the boats are important in a way you don't understand. That still small voice that has no words, I heard it anyway. And I think I'm lucky that I can hear this. When I was preparing for today and talking to my girlfriend, I said, well, living authentically, you don't really have a lot of choice. You hear the call and then it's not about brave, you just have to do it. And she said, you hear the call, Simon. My feelings speak really loud, and I'm lucky that when things ring true, I'm not talking about black and white thinking, I'm talking about when somebody tells you something of their soul that is so important in the world, ding, ding, it kind of, it's like there's music appears and golden light, and you just know that's true. Well, maybe not everybody has that, but when you have that, you don't really have any choice. You have to be Jesus. It just feels right. I am the Jesus in the story, and I will embody truth as fully as I can. And so will you. The unnamed woman enabled me to carve out a way for myself, to live more as a male personality in a biologically female body. And listening to your heart is easy once you've done it, but it's extremely difficult at the time. You need to nurture and love those vulnerable parts of the soul. And it's a very, very slow process. And 10 years on, I can say, I chose well. And my mother would say, Simon, you chose well. And all my friends will say, Simon, you chose well. You are more in the world now. You have so much more to offer. All those voices spoke very clearly, and it was hard. So in summary, I'd like to say, in our own situations, as I continue on, this is my advice for myself, and also I'd like to share it with you lovely people, which is, when we are thinking things through and hearing these different ideas speaking within us and from the people around us, what is the motivation behind what people are saying? Is it coming from a loving, patient place? Is it spoken gently and eloquently with grace? Or is it forceful and authoritarian and loaded with fear and judgment? Can I sing you one of my songs? Yeah, because I think it will explain, it'll explain a little bit. I wrote this song called Funny Kind of Guy when I was still very androgynous. I was in Glasgow, and Glasgow's not it wasn't back then a very good place for changing genders. It's a very violent place where people swear a lot and drink a lot, and they tell you what they think. You never know whether somebody's going to tell you they think you're wonderful or tell you that they'll hate you. And I used to sing this song publicly in bars and concerts and stuff, and people would look at me and stare. And I'm a funny kind of guy, and I'm a gentle kind of guy. You know life is strange, and maybe I don't see things the same as you. Try not to judge, and you will find people have less to hide. And I'm a lonesome kind of guy, and I'm a lucky kind of guy. Because life is strange, and maybe I don't see things the same as you. Try not to judge, and you'll find people have less to hide. And I'm a curvy kind of guy. Yeah, I'm a dykey kind of guy. Cause life is strange, and maybe I don't see things the same as you. Try not to judge, and you will find people have less to hide. Be true to me. Be true, and you might hear me. When I'm changing, when I change my sides. Cause I'm a funny kind of guy.